ocean. Make believe me a train now, each and every day now. Baby, if I follow my heart, my mind is a fine mind. My mind is a right mind. My mind is a clear mind. Clear mind, if I follow my heart. Never, never could do wrong. Hey, hey, follow my mind.
Jamaica's Jimmy Cliff with the title track of his 1976 album, If I Follow My Mind. There's a certain amount of advice in that title. Jimmy Cliff, at 68, is the only living musician to hold the Order of Merit, the highest honor the government of Jamaica confers on individuals deemed to have achieved much in the arts and sciences. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, the nation's highest level law enforcement official, followed quickly on the heels of President Obama's declaration of outrage about the June 12th massacre at the Pulse Gay Nightclub in Orlando, Florida, and his promise to the nation to seek justice. Lynch was a featured guest on several major weekend newsmaker shows discussing the progress of the Department of Justice that the Department of Justice was making in pursuing leads in the case with the alleged gunman Omar Mateen, 29 years old, and others believed connected to him at the center of the investigation. Of course, he's saying there's so much that they have learned and so much more still to learn, but in any event, Mateen and others supposedly are in the crosshairs of the Department of Justice. As you recall, 49 people were killed by Mateen, who himself was killed in a gun battle with police at the site. 53 others were wounded, many of them critically, and we are continuing to observe this story unfolding. There are many things to be concerned here about the Department of Justice and the role of the Department of Justice, because, like everything else, there is precedence to this. And there is a context for all of this that is occurring. None of it is brand new. It's a continuum. But what we will be discussing are the political arrangements that are involved in these kinds of discussions that appear, on the one hand, to be very official, and the major thrust is to secure the psyche of the nation, to get people to think that, well, there is an affirmative response to this awful tragedy, and it is in the pursuit of justice. So let's listen. One of the major shows that she was on, in fact, was Fox News Sunday, the host of which is Chris Wallace. And it was interesting because in that short span, Wallace manages to address some things that yielded rather interesting answers from Loretta Lynch. But let's take a listen to it.
Top law enforcement officer, Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Welcome to Fox News Sunday.
Good morning, Chris.
Why isn't the wife of the Orlando shooter in jail? We know that she went on some of these scouting trips with Omar Mateen. She knew that he bought guns and that he was planning an attack. Why not charge her?
Well, where we are now is in the middle of a very aggressive investigation. And yes, we are talking to everyone who had contact with this killer. And that, of course, includes the family members. We want to know what they know, what they saw, what he said to them. The investigation is ongoing. We don't have any announcements to make about other individuals at this time. But we are trying to recreate the days, the weeks, the months of this killer's life before this attack. And we're also asking people who had contact with him to come forward and give us that information as well.
Now, I know that you are going to Orlando yourself on Tuesday and that tomorrow the government will release transcripts of all contacts between the FBI and Mateen when he was on the terror watch list. Any sense at this point that the government made a mistake when it first put him on and then took him off the terror watch list?
Well, I am going to Orlando on Tuesday, and I'll be meeting with the team on the ground, as well as the victims and first responders, and meeting with this brave community, this LGBT community, the Latino community, that was targeted in this terrible act of hate and terror. What we are releasing tomorrow are actually the transcripts of the phone contact between the killer and the Orlando negotiators the night of the attack. So it will be a partial transcript of those calls. We're trying to get information out. It's our goal to be as transparent as possible in this investigation. With respect to the prior contact that we had with him, we're going back and looking at that as well. We're going to go back and look at everything we did in connection with him and be as transparent as possible about how it evolved, what developed, and what changes we could have made.
The Senate is set to vote on Monday on some gun control measures. Under a Republican plan, if someone who's on a terror watch list wants to buy a gun, the government would have 3 days. The sale would be halted. The government would have 3 days to prove probable cause to a judge. Why isn't that reasonable?
Well, what we've been looking at is the plan that currently would give the Department of Justice two very important tools. First, the ability to, in fact, stop a sale if someone is on the watch list. But second, and more importantly, if there is litigation about that, because, of course, people would have the right to challenge that. It does cover a constitutional right. It gives us the ability to set procedures in place that let us protect sensitive and classified information in the adjudication of an appeal. Those two issues are very, very important to us, and that's why we're supporting the amendment that contains those two important issues.
But what about the 72-hour deadline, that you have to prove probable cause in 72 hours or the gun sale goes through?
Well, what we think is more appropriate is the one that gives us the most flexibility, the ability to stop that sale at the beginning, and the ability, again, if it's challenged, to protect sensitive and classified information. Those are the concerns that law enforcement has had some time now about how to manage this very, very difficult and important issue.
But you know what the critics say. They say that means if you maximum flexibility, the government will take weeks or months. The terror watch list has 800,000 names on it, and you know that some of the names are on there mistakenly. If you're going to take away someone's constitutional right, don't you have to give them due process, and don't you have to give them prompt due process?
Well, you have to give them both. And we feel that the amendment that gives us those two important tools lets us do that. In addition to providing due process, as you noted, whenever a constitutional right is implicated, that has to be built into it. We have a very strong law enforcement interest in protecting the types of investigations that, in fact, put people on the watch list or that may be around those individuals. And so it's very important to us that we have the ability to conduct this in a way that lets us protect that information.
But is 72 hours too short a time?
Well, we think that having the maximum flexibility is the best way to achieve that. It lets us determine whether or not the sale should proceed, first of all. We may be able to look at a person and make a determination even faster than that, or we may not. We may, in fact, need more time. And I think the American people deserve us to take the greatest amount of time and scrutiny that we can in the important decision of whether or not someone who's been implicated in this matter should, in fact, be able to buy a firearm. But, of course, there has to be redress. There has to be a way for people to challenge it, and we do want that. But we also, in the course of that, need to be able to protect sensitive and classified information.
On Monday, the day after the attack, Donald Trump said this.
When I'm elected, I will suspend immigration from areas of the world where there is a proven history of terrorism against the United States, Europe, or our allies, until we fully understand how to end these threats.
The next day, you said this: we have to push back on the voices that prey on fear and that sow division. Attorney General Lynch, were you talking about Donald Trump?
I was not talking about Mr. Trump or any specific person, but I was talking about the climate of fear that comes about after these terrorist attacks that often leads people to react without thinking and to react in fear, and sadly allows them to take the law into their own hands and try, in fact, and go out and target other individuals. I was talking about that climate that we've seen after so many of these attacks.
Do you think that Donald Trump contributes to that climate?
You know, I don't have a comment on Mr. Trump or any of the candidates. I think we have to keep our eye on the larger picture here, which is the victims of this crime were from a community that is often marginalized, and that, frankly, the LGBT community is more often the victims of hate crimes than any other recognized group. That comes from a wide variety of sources. We have to push back against those voices that are speaking out now that are not supportive of that community, and we have to make sure that this country stays open and free and inclusive for everyone.
But I guess the question is this to be viewed, and not to say it's one or the other, as primarily a hate crime or as a terror attack? Also this week, the CIA director, John Brennan, said that ISIS is now focused on launching terror attacks outside the Middle East. Here he is.
The group is probably exploring a variety of means for infiltrating operatives into the West, including in refugee flows, smuggling routes, and legitimate methods of travel.
Given that, is it unreasonable for Donald Trump to say, stop, at least temporarily, ban refugees from coming into this country?
Well, let me go to your first point, which is, what are we talking about when we talk about this terrible attack in Orlando? And as the president has said, it is both an act of terror and an act of hate. Clearly, this is an individual who was inspired by terrorist ideology, but it was an attack that was directed against the LGBT community and the Latino community. We are trying to find out his motivations. We're trying to find out everything we can about what led him to this path, what put him in that nightclub that morning with that firearm. Now, one of the things that we have talked about before is our concern about homegrown extremists, individuals who consume this radical, violent ideology and then act on it. And of course, what we're working on is making sure that our investigations pick up those individuals and also gather as much information as we can from people who know them, from citizens who are concerned about them, so that we can, in fact, intervene before this kind of tragedy happens again.
I want to talk about one other subject with you. President Obama recently endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. Take a look.
I'm with her. I am fired up, and I cannot wait to get out there and campaign for Hillary.
Now, you're a political appointee of the president. Does that create a conflict of interest for you? Does it make it harder for you to handle the criminal investigation into Clinton when your boss is saying he thinks she should be president?
Well, you know, I don't get involved in whom the president endorses, and I don't have comments, as I said before, on any of the candidates. The investigation into the State Department email matter is going to be handled like any other matter. We've got career agents and lawyers looking at that. They will follow the facts and follow the evidence wherever it leads and come to a conclusion.
So does this create a conflict of interest for you?
No, this is not a conflict for me or for the department or for anyone. We will continue to do all of our work in the same way in which we always have, with the interests of the American people first and foremost.
Now, the same day that Clinton was endorsed by the president, you met with the president at the White House. Did you in any way, shape, or form discuss the Clinton case with the president?
We've never discussed the Clinton case. I've never spoken about it with the president or really with anyone at the White House. That's not the kind of relationship that I have with people there, and it would be inappropriate to do so.
Attorney General Lynch, thank you. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Chris.
Pleasure to talk with you. Please come back.
Thank you.
Okay, it sounds pretty good until you begin to get close to the words that were said and the context for these words, and you come up with a startling revelation. And this is what I think people ought to do in the news business. As the shows went, I mean, she appeared in several on several programs. Chris Wallace asked her many journalistic questions, as opposed to many fluff questions that were asked of her in other venues. But let's take a closer look at what was said, what was meant, what we heard. Well, the first thing is, the categorization of this crime the, just so you know, today, and it was referred to in the report that we just heard, that interview, the federal government, again, Ms. Lynch of the Department of Justice, a kind of limited transcript was released this morning, and in it, it shows overwhelmingly a terrorist connection between Omar Mateen and a so-called terrorist group, or his confessed or professed affiliation, his self-professed affiliation with ISIS. He had telephoned ahead when this awful tragedy was unfolding. He was busy at work carrying out, he felt in his own head, some kind of a vendetta in the name of ISIS. And he called the police and supposedly confessed that he was the killer, and the reason for it was that the United States was busy bombing people in Syria and in other parts of the world, especially in those parts of the world that also are targeted by the Islamic State. So he envisions himself, allegedly, because even though the transcript has been released, we have no way of knowing the actual authenticity of these things. We can only go with what the authorities have said, because we have no independent way of knowing these things. But the authorities, meaning the Justice Department, is saying that these things did happen. He did profess an affiliation, or his act, to be in accordance with what he thought was the directive of the Islamic State. He therefore, in his head, was acting as an agent of the Islamic State. And he was employing the tactics encouraged by the Islamic State, the tactics of being a lone wolf attacker, inflicting maximum carnage in order to make a point. Okay. Well, that's on one level. And we had the president, we played the clip here, pronouncing in the immediate aftermath of this tragedy that it was an act of hate and an act of terror. So from the very beginning, we had a definition of this, even though the president himself had said at the time that not enough of the facts are known about the case. But he immediately categorized it as an act of hate and an act of terror. Okay, I'll go with that. I did compare and contrast the president's attitudes and his pronouncements in the immediate aftermath of the killing, the mass murder in Orlando, and that of Dylann Roof conducting a mass murder in a Charleston church just last year. In fact, the anniversary was just a few days ago, the first anniversary of it. And the president at the time, although he was very much aware of ISIS and groups like ISIS, did not consider that an act of terror, nor was the word assassination mentioned, although one of the victims of his crime, this mass shooting at the church, was an elected official, a state senator, who also was a pastor of the church. So we have the same Justice Department and the same president having an entirely different orientation with regard to these kinds of things that happen that would suggest, on the one hand, an act of hate, but on the other hand, an act of terror. So we have to get a definition, it seems to me, a working definition from both the president, because he is the commander-in-chief. He's not just the guy who is the president of the country. He has a military title. So when a guy in that position, a person in that position, makes a pronouncement about this is an act of terror, and he says that at the time he makes that pronouncement, there isn't enough information to even confirm what I'm saying to you. But I can tell you it is an act of terror. But just a year earlier, in the same capacity, he simply called it a tragedy. It was a tragedy informed by America's dark past. We have homegrown extremists, according to Loretta Lynch. This reference, of course, is to Mateen himself, and in reference to the killing, the mass killing, the massacre in Orlando. She attributes it in part to homegrown extremists. But the attack in South Carolina was not viewed as an extremist attack. Just a kid gone wrong. A kid gone off on the wrong track of life. He was not an extremist. Although he had, and he had published ahead of time, way ahead of time, way ahead of his mass murder, he had published what the media, the Justice Department, even the president had referred to as a manifesto. He had a manifesto. Okay. He had been known to find attractive the thinking of white supremacist groups. But he was neither an extremist, nor was he a classic terrorist. He was hate-filled and a good kid gone bad. Interestingly, the Justice Department at the time was under Eric Holder. And Eric Holder's Justice Department also didn't find much reason to move aggressively in other forms, in other acts of terror. Right there in Ferguson, Missouri, for example, his Justice Department issued a scathing report finding racism, trenchant, deep-seated racism within the police department there. At the same time, his Justice Department found no reason to indict the killer of Michael Brown, the police officer who killed Michael Brown. He said there was just no, the threshold for prosecution was very high. He reiterated that same position with regard to the chokehold death, the police chokehold death of Eric Garner. There was just no, the threshold for prosecution was very high. And it was very unlikely that the police department would have been, the Justice Department would have been able to secure an indictment. So that was gone under the bridge. Now, we have to have some kind of understanding, it seems to me, about this term, or these terms, extremism, simply because a police officer wears a uniform, makes that officer not at all eligible to be considered an extremist. Simply because a mass murderer, mass killer, who clearly directed his attention and his energy in the execution of 9 individuals within the context of a clearly defined ideology of white supremacy and hatred, yes. But it is an ideology. It is not just personal bad feelings. There is a rationale for the extermination of people of a racial group perceived to be worthy of extermination, which is exactly what Omar Mateen allegedly professed as his motivation. And he's considered not only an extremist, but a terrorist. So we've got to get this thing together. Because it seems to me the record reflects that we have had instance after instance after instance of homegrown terrorism that never has been prosecuted as such. And a recurring pattern involves the Justice Department taking on reluctantly and being pressured by sometimes national movements that had to compel them to act in the interest of justice. But there, in many cases, and the thread in these cases is racial. They just can't wrap the department around these cases to deliver justice. I mean, if you document, it seems to me, you document repeated acts of violations by a group of people, the one thing they have in common is they wear a uniform that says they belong to this police department or that. But they're committing murder. And you can't call it that. You won't proceed in the way that, according to Loretta Lynch, she says that the Justice Department is going to proceed with great, you heard that word, I hope, transparency. Transparency. Have we witnessed transparency on a consistent basis? When police officers execute innocent people, many of them belonging or subscribing to racist ideologies, a pattern of racial behavior that is objectionable and illegal, but they are expunged of blame automatically because they wear a uniform. Are they homegrown extremists and terrorists too? How is it that certain people get this kind of tag attached to them and others don't? I would love to hear Loretta Lynch, who herself, as U.S. attorney in the Eastern District, that's in New York, not pursue several cases of civilian executions by police officers. You know, the threshold is kind of high. But because we are in a politically charged time, this is an election year, and she was very careful to follow through on the clues that President Obama and his machine, his PR machine, and Hillary Clinton's PR machine had concocted. How do you situate this? You situate the Justice Department as the champion, the sudden champion of LGBTQ rights. Suddenly, they are the champion. Why? How come? How does this happen? And in order to do that, you still could get a lot of more mileage by marrying that, because you're courting that vote. You marry that with the standing issue of national safety. You take Donald Trump's trump cards, as it were, on this question away from him. So we have a twofer. We get a twofer. The president, as Chris Wallace quite astutely observed in the course of the interview, the president has said he's campaigning for Hillary. She's got the black vote. Not to worry about that. She's got much of the Latino vote. But she could use a little bit more. This is a situation involving mostly Latinos, the victims of Omar Mateen. And here you have an opportunity to capitalize on it in a really interesting and astute way. The president has named it an act of hate and terror right out the box. And he said he was able to do that because that's what his Homeland Security chief had told him. That's what the FBI chief had told him. And he's commander-in-chief, so he speaks with some authority here, even though all the facts are not in. You see how this goes? So now we have a horrible situation. Horrible. That is also highly marketable and is highly strategic in the course of delivering a win for the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton, who is going to be supported, physically running around with her, will be none other than the president, who is the boss of all of them. He's the capo di tutti capi for the moment. He's almost out the door, but he's delivering first, and everybody is in lockstep with that. They have to take these lines. Well, you'll notice that Chris Wallace didn't ask her a very important question. When she says, for example, he asked her, well, how is the investigation going? And she pretty much says, well, we're trying to be as transparent as possible. As possible. So now this has been elevated to a whole different standard, a whole different level. Omar Mateen isn't just like Dylann Roof, who declared his allegiance to white supremacy, but is not ideologically motivated, according to the Justice Department and according to the president. He's a good kid gone bad. But Omar Mateen absolutely is a pawn of ISIS. And therefore, this is not only an ideological basis for his action, it now raises the very act itself to terror. Terrorism on U.S. soil. All kinds of crazy things could happen as a result of that. There isn't a remote possibility that here's a guy who is deeply off the rails. That is not part of the discussion. Not part of the discussion, because it is not possible that that could be the reason for his actions. He and his actions are placed firmly in the crucible of international terrorism. We had in Newtown, remember that horrible mass shooting of all those little children in elementary school? The young man who killed them all, 26 people, said, with us an assault weapon, was a good kid gone bad. There was not even the remotest connection between the horrible act that he committed and possible mental illness here. And there was no one else to blame. Here, in the instance of the Pulse Gay Club massacre, we have even the Justice Department in that very interview with Chris Wallace. It might have slipped by you. Loretta Lynch says, what we're looking at is what changes we could have made. Now, this is after 49 people are killed, after 53 others are wounded, several of them still in critical condition, after he came to the attention of the federal authorities a couple of times. No one was asked. She was not asked by Chris Wallace, who is a very astute guy, a very good journalist. I don't agree half the time with what his points of view, but he's quite good at asking very important questions. But the question he refused to ask her today was, what degree does the Justice Department assume responsibility for blowing it with respect to Homeland Security and all these acts of terror that they're supposed to have their fingers on the pulse on? And here we have a clear-cut indication that the government failures, just like in the situation in Ferguson or the situation in the Garner case, the failure of the government to do its job, the Justice Department and all these investigative agencies that are now trying to be, quote, as transparent as possible, the one thing they're not as transparent as possible about is how they messed up. If you're now investigating Omar Mateen as the great terrorist, ISIS's agent in the United States, well, you had him in your clutches, not once and not twice, but several times and at several different levels. At his job, you had the gun shop owner where he purchased weapons call the FBI and said, look, this doesn't look right. I'm just pulling your coat. He was on the watch list, the famous watch list. And now you're discussing all of this in academic terms about the 72 hours of the watch list. And can a person in 72 hours basically secure their constitutional rights if they believe they have been wronged in being denied the right to purchase a weapon? All of this is happening. Nobody's asking, well, wait a minute. You had this man. He was not an unknown entity to you. To what degree are you responsible for the deaths of 49 people, the shooting of 53 others? And this is after Newtown, after your coat has been pulled in so many ways about these acts of mass murder. You've had all kinds of examples of what happens and all the triggering mechanisms that should cause somebody to say, hey, let's take a look at this. But in the case of Mateen specifically, you had information about him. The gun shop owner did what he was supposed to do. He reported it. And now, after these people have been shot dead and others wounded, now you come up with, we're investigating him as a terrorist, but we're not doing anything to look at how we played a role, our responsibility in this debacle, this horrible crime. They have no responsibility. She brushes it off by saying, we are going to look at what changes we could have made. The changes were made. It's like Eric Holder. And these things are significant to point out because you have an African-American president and two, in succession, African-American attorneys general. And yet the community that has been looking for some kind of redemption, some kind of protection from terror attacks, consistent terror attacks that have been happening all over the country by people in uniform. They get none. This is not an act of terror. They can't do anything about it. The threshold for prosecution is too high. Imagine that. The highest law enforcement official in the country, that's the official position. He said it. Eric Holder said it. And this is not just a recent mindset. It tells you that when these folks run around talking about how proud they are, they have the first African-American president and blah, 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 blah. I said, look at the evidence about effectiveness. Look what is happening. I was there. I was the only reporter in the room when the parents of Amadou Diallo, an African immigrant who was shot dead as he arrived home by a group of officers, none of whom, not one of them, convicted of this crime. 41 times he was shot right there in the vestibule of his home for no good reason. All of them white. And nobody was convicted of that crime. I was there in the room when they went to the Justice Department, the Civil Rights Division, then headed by whom? Eric Holder. Promising to take a close look at the case and blah, 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 blah. Nothing happened. Nothing. I went with a group of African chiefs who insisted that I be in the room. They didn't want me in the room. They didn't want me in the room. But they said, they were adamant, if she's not in this room, we're not in this room. Because they wanted someone to witness the negotiation, the process. And Holder was duly patronizing. He thought they were interesting people, and he suffered for their loss, and he was sorrowful about it. Nothing happened. The police officers got bench trials, and they walked away. They moved the trial out of the Bronx because the Bronx people couldn't be trusted to serve on a jury. So they moved it to Albany. And every single one of those officers walked away. Now, is that terrorism? Is that terrorism? All these cases that we know, where police deliberately, I remember covering this case of a police officer, Robert Torsney, a young boy on Thanksgiving Day in Brooklyn, sees a commotion happening in the projects where he was living. And he walked up to Officer Torsney and he just asked him, "What's going on?" Witness after witness said the officer removed his gun and point blank shot Randolph Evans dead. He just killed, summary execution right there on the streets, right in front of his house. Do you know they invented a psychiatric condition to explain Robert Torsney's action? And he got away with it. Probably collected his fat pension and is living quite well if he's still alive. Is that terrorism? So when these things, you're hearing it, a question is asked of the U.S. Attorney General, and she says, as a kind of academic exercise, one of the things that they would do with these 49 dead people and 53 wounded people is not hold themselves responsible for that, but they will now look into what changes we could have made, unquote. You see, this is how it's done. They're not hiding this stuff anymore. I mean, it's right there in the open. And this is coming from an African-American woman. People say, well, you're playing the race card. Yes, I am. Playing the race card because, look, we have to, at some point, say the honest truth. The truth is, there is some kind of expectation that, if nothing else, we share a historical memory and we share a kind of appreciation of our obligation to do the right thing because of our history, because these acts of terror, which are increasingly new to other communities, are consistently regular in our communities. This business of assault rifles and whatnot may be a twist in the sense that there are major ways now of annihilating or inflicting massive damage. But this is a consistent part of our collective historical memory. The annihilation, I shared with you, sometimes of entire little villages by guns and people with guns. And people with guns who subscribe to a very deeply entrenched ideology based on race in the United States. That's part of the history. And therefore you say, wow, a black president, a black U.S. Attorney General in his first term, a black female U.S. Attorney General in his second term, surely this question would arise within a context of respect for the historical past and within the context of an obligation to respond accordingly, to do the kinds of things that would not have the current U.S. Attorney General now talking about what changes we could make or could have made. Ridiculous. It's clear what changes could be made, but this is about politicizing the deaths of people seen as being affiliated with groups that have no political protection. None. As I discussed before, the difference here, and it only happens because the gay political power, and there's racism here too, is seen as being rooted in white leadership. The Latinos who have been killed, the Latinos who have been shot and wounded, mostly Puerto Ricans, they are benefiting by proxy of a white-led political movement. Otherwise, you know, they'd stop for 3 seconds, wipe their eyes, and life goes on. But that is not what's happening now. This is a treasure trove for these hard-hearted people in politics. They could make so much out of this to their advantage. So suddenly Hillary Clinton has a heart. Suddenly the president presents himself in person, on site. We talked about the change in language and in attitude and in resolve. All these things are possible now that were not possible when Randolph Evans was shot, when Amadou Diallo was shot and killed, when even just recently, Freddie Gray in Baltimore. It wasn't possible for the Justice Department to do its job. Because the perpetrators couldn't possibly rise to the level of terrorists when they take people for a so-called rough ride, or where the police in Chicago literally have torture chambers in abandoned buildings, and the guy who heads it up ends up with a plum job at Guantanamo Bay, but that's not terrorism. You're dealing with expendable people, and they are politically unprotected. So, in the next coming days, you would hear even more of this kind of language that distorts a very simple fact. And that is, we cannot trust a government and its agents and agencies to secure justice. It's not going to happen. What is securing justice now still isn't the government. It's the people. The government has to be seen as doing some kind of thing, responding in some kind of way, but at the root of it, they're not doing anything. You know, they're whispering all these platitudes in our ears, and we get to be calm and reassured. But in fact, there is going to be no systemic change here. That radically, and I mean that from the root, that radically changes this whole question about terrorism, extremism, racist white supremacist ideology that informs all of this and that has been doing so for centuries in the United States. Well, this is where I leave you today. I thank you for listening. Let me know what you think. You can drop a note at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Let me know what you thought of the program today. Bye-bye.
My mind's a right.